Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
We got a great episode here for you today. We've got a long conversation with former UConn great Jerome Dyson. We talk a lot in this first part about his college career playing at UConn, playing for Jim Calhoun, all the other pros he played with, his experience getting ready for the draft, when to go, some of the injuries he dealt with, transitioning from college to pro basketball, what it was like playing in the G League, what it was like finally being picked up by an NBA team. All those things, and then we kind of get to the point where he decided to make the switch to play overseas, and that's kind of where this first part ends, and then in part two, we'll pick up with his kind of overseas career and some of those stories, but he does drop a couple early teases of some of his crazier shenanigans that he's been exposed to overseas during this first part, so I think you really enjoy it, and before we get going, just obviously got a quick word from one of our sponsors, betonline.ag. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy betting new year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And with that, let's get to today's podcast. All right, everybody, welcome into another Ball Movement. Today, we've got a really cool guest for you. If you're a fan of the old Big East, this is a name you're definitely going to know. We got Jerome Dyson joining us. It's a third team All Big East, former NBA D-League All-Star, Italian Super Cup MVP and winner, Italian Series A champion, Israeli League Final Four MVP, Israeli League champion, Israeli Cup winner, two-time Israeli League All-Star, first team All-League. There's a lot of first team and champions in that resume there. Mike, you've known this guy going way back. Why don't you bring in Jerome here for us?
Yeah, and multiple Silver Spring Boys and Girls Club MVPs too. So we can't forget about that.
Yeah, man.
Me and Jerome, we go back probably to age, 10, 11, you know, just growing up in Silver Spring, Maryland, just guys that just love to hoop. We ran, came across each other as competitors mostly, you know, growing up. The coach that actually coached Jerome for most of his youth career, Warren Anderson, who I also played with for a short time, just recently passed. So we want to dedicate this episode to him simply because, and I'm going to let Jerome expound on this, but, you know, he has such an impact. And he was just a genuine guy. You know, he didn't want anything from anybody. He just wanted to see us do well. Even up until recently, you know, he was contacting me about the stuff I was doing with my book and any way that he could help promote it or anything, you know, he was all for it. And so he's just a great guy, man. And he had such an impact on a lot of kids coming up around that time. Jerome, you want to talk about Warren a little bit?
Yeah, but just like you were saying, Mike, just a great guy. He was a father figure to me growing up. I mean, you know, it's for me, it was probably a lot closer to you. I mean, the Silver Spring, the Boys and Girls Club, it was like a, you know, like a 25-minute drive for me, half an hour sometimes with that traffic going around that. And so I spent a lot of time there. Like, he took me in, embraced me with the group of guys there that we had, great group. Still a lot of, you know, a lot of guys that I speak to this day. And like I said, just the father figure, just a great guy that a lot of people don't know, just in and out, just genuine, like always there. Like you said, I was still in contact with him till that time. I mean, he would always hit me on Facebook, see how I was
Facebook,
doing.
Yeah,
I was, you know, I really, you know, I didn't talk too much on the phone, but he was, you know, always on Facebook Messenger. And so
no profile pictures. So I thought it was like somebody hacking the phone. But, you know, once he started talking, I realized it was really him. And so I started responding to him and things like that. But, yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, man, that's it's just a crazy thing. When I got the call, it was like, nah, that couldn't, that's not possible. Yeah.
They just celebrated him like a few days before. He just got
I couldn't make it down there to the, they went, him and Walt, they gave him the awards, and I wanted to get down there, but couldn't make it. But you know, it's just something like that. It's just, you don't know when the last time you get to talk to a person. So, you know, it's one of those things is you just a great guy in and out. I just, like you said, man, from that Boys and Girls Club, man, it's just, I still can just picture it in my head. You know, I'm just one elbow up on his stomach, eating some candy, doing a timeout, you know, it's just, one of those type of things. I mean, just like I said, just a great guy through and through.
And people always say that, you know, when somebody passes, like, you know, all the positive things about them, but he literally was a genuine guy.
Yeah, that's, you know, what I'm saying. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like we gotta find something to say. It's not like anything that you hear from somebody is a positive thing. Yeah. And so that's just one of the things you could say about him is just, like I said, just genuine through and through type of person, no matter what it is, like sports, family, everything. And I've even learned, like, after that, just how good of an athlete he was. I never knew.
We only knew him as a coach, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. I only knew him as that guy and as a friend, like somebody who took me in from the outside.
Yeah, so this episode is dedicated to Warren Anderson, a great coach, but even better person. Condolences to Pudge and the whole family, Warren Anderson Jr., the whole family.
It's a real testament to what kind of person he must have been for both of you guys to still be talking about the impact he had on you and the things you could take away, you know, this many years later. So hope his family finds some peace and listening to this is, you know, further reinforcement of the good work he did.
Yeah. Yes.
Jerome, just taking this in a, you know, a little bit of a lighter note here a little bit. I mentioned there's a lot of champion, winner, you know, those kinds of things in your resume there. What allowed you to be so successful throughout your career?
I mean, I guess, starting young, I mean, I was always, you know, I've always played up on a lot of teams, you know, just even neighborhood friends, everybody's a lot older than me. So, you know, it forces you to, you know, step things up. And so even from a young age, that's what I'm saying. It's just, I was just being a competitor, just that's who the person I am. And so never wanting to lose, never wanting to quit. Like, that's just the type of person I am. And so all those things that, you know, growing up, the trials and hard times that you go through makes you into the person that you are. So I guess it was just my will not to give up. I mean, you know, a lot of people, you get in a position where you, it's just fight or flight, I guess, type of thing. And, you know, and that's just the person I've been. And so just growing up from there, just my youth in Potomac, Maryland, where I grew up in Scotland, you know, just a single Black community. And so, you know, we didn't have a lot there. So it was just try to get out. And that's what I did. Just fighting and just the passion that I had for sports in general. Just not basketball. Like, I grew up playing everything. So it's just like, my passion for the sports, is what really, pushed me through everything.
Mike, if somebody had to cover Jerome at a young age, or match up with him, what allowed him to be so successful from your perspective?
Well, he could shoot, you know, like he could shoot at a young age. And as we go along, but we'll talk about all that stuff. But like one thing he could really shoot at a young age, and that was my thing. I couldn't dribble. Nobody emphasized dribbling to me as a kid, but I could always shoot. We were both pretty athletic, you know. But, you know, as he got older, you know, he came back home. I remember when he came back home, he was jumping from the free throw line. And I was like, yo, he different, you know, he's different now. But we'll get to that journey in a second. But that was the one thing that really stood out, was just we were always competing. Like, the competition was always there. You know, we had battles, and our teams were always like 1 and 2 in the Boys and Girls Club. We always played outside, like Rising Stars and all of that stuff. And but he could always shoot.
I was really, like, I wasn't that was a really like a good thing. I mean, I pull up from anywhere. A couple steps, and it wasn't like, you know, I'm just at that age, you kind of like just throwing the ball sometimes. And so, you know, I was that mostly all I could do, I could play some defense, but I couldn't really dribble. So, I mean, I could dribble, but, you know, just like, but I wasn't like a crossover, do this, do that, run this. I was just, give me the ball, I'm going to shoot it.
Yeah. Like these kids now, like, you know, we watch them now, they're in training, they're getting so much specific training on ball handling and making reads and all that. Like we went to camp and everything, but we never got that. Like we were just
Never got that. I mean, I can't remember how many. I don't think I went to a lot of camps, you know, just growing up. Like it was just all AAU and other any other type of, you know, situation where you could play basketball. I played in like that I-270 thing. Mm-hmm. I played in anything I could get into, I was trying to get into.
Yeah.
It seems like kids play a lot less actual games these days, though. Like there's way more dribbling with a tennis ball and that stuff.
Man, it's just that's what I said. It's more, they focus more on, you know, just do this, do that. But as when we were growing up, it was 20, 25 kids in the park. Like,
yeah.
If we went from basketball, we went maybe right from basketball to football on the pavement. Yeah. I didn't even grass, on the pavement. Like, and so it's like, you don't see that. You're not seeing kids go out and playing no matter what time it is at night. Like, street lights got to come on, you know, mom calling you, get in the house. Like, none of that. Like, it's
but they don't know how to play, though. They don't know how to play. They have great skill sets.
If you don't, like, you can't translate it, it's hard. We grew up, you know, it's all ages on the court. So it's not like I'm playing against, you know, just that my seven-year-old or, you know, like, but it's like grown people on the court. It's all types of people. So it's, you got to bring it.
Yeah, 100%.
Jerome, of anybody we've had on the podcast so far, I think you're the one with sort of the most like broad range of experience. You played in the Big East, you played in the D League, you played in the NBA, you've played in several countries overseas. Is it ever crazy to kind of sit back and think about like all the different places the game of basketball has taken you to?
It definitely is. One of the most things that I'm passionate about is that, you know, being able to travel the world and see so many different places and experience different cultures. And I left Maryland to go to prep school. And so that was my probably like my first like transition into like stepping out on my own. Cause, you know, I left to go to Proctor Academy as my sophomore year in high school. And so that's up in New Hampshire, Andover, New Hampshire. And so, you know, that's in the middle of the woods, you know, not around anything. And so that was probably my first, like my really first like big test of like, can you be on your own? Can you survive and be able to, you know, a lot of people, you know, get to us, ain't been away from home before and it's hard for them. That's why you find a lot of people that go overseas. It's hard. It's hard to transition over to what I'm going to eat or who I'm going to talk to, what type of friends I'm going to have, like who am I going to be able to talk to? But you know, it wasn't really that kind of like a stress with me going to prep school because everybody spoke English, you know, but you know, being a quiet person that I was younger, I didn't really talk to anybody. Like it takes like a couple weeks for me to open up. Like I'm not the person I am today. Like I'm more talk, but before I'm like, I remember, you know, my car ride with my first coach, my Gregor McKechnie. He was my basketball coach there in Proctor Academy. First ride to campus, you know, it's like I'm just sitting there like this, like a 2-hour ride, man. Just 2-hour ride, just not saying nothing. You know, he asked me if I'm hungry. No, I'm good. Like
a lot of one word answers.
And so that was like my really first, you know, being away from family, not having family, you know, at that point, you know, I don't get to come home for a lot of the holidays, you know, because the prep school, you know, is standing on campus. And so that was like my really first, you know, I can do this. I'm going to be all right on my own type of situation.
Yeah, and quick point, Matt, the guy that got him to Proctor Academy is the same guy that helped me transfer colleges to UC Riverside, Walter Ray.
Yeah.
You know, this guy had, he was like World Wild West for Montgomery County.
Yeah, basketball. That's the thing. Walter Ray and Warren Anderson, they were like, when I was growing up, they were like just the two people that made it happen for me. As far as like getting to practices or getting to games, like always made it happen, no matter what. Would pick me up wherever I was, drive me to wherever I had to be. And just another father figure that was there for me growing up. Just a real good guy also. And like Mike was saying, I don't know exactly where I would be if I hadn't came across those two, because they were really influential for me in my career as I was young.
Yeah, I think that's something that people don't realize a lot too. Like you hear about people when they get to college and the kind of not finished product, but you know what I mean? Like once you're sort of well established as a recruit, right. But
yeah, it's always a lot to that one that got me right to college or not, but not everybody from that college back to when you first picked that ball up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jerome, I think you're also the first person we've had so far with actual NBA experience here. I assume growing up, that was a dream for you, something you wanted to do. You got to play in the league, maybe not as long as you would have liked, but can you just talk a little bit about what that was like, you know, finally getting through a training camp and getting a 10-day and like actually starting an NBA game even?
Right. I want to say it wasn't really something that, you know, I dreamed about is playing in NBA, because like I told you, like I just love sports at that age. I don't really think I really got serious about it until I was a freshman, maybe like towards the end of my freshman year in high school, when you know
you put up numbers too at Churchill. You put up numbers too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's another thing, man. Like that's another thing about them, man. I should have been playing varsity basketball as a freshman. You know, but you know, it's a lot of politics you're gonna go into, you know, it's a lot of stuff, but there's no way you can tell me that I could have made that varsity team or even been playing. Like, you know, because they called me up for that playoff series and I killed I think it was Wooten or somebody like that. Yeah. But that's another, you know, that was another reason why I got out of there. It's because, you know, it was like at that time, you know, my head wasn't all the way where it needed to be, you know, and it was like like I said, I was so passionate about sports, and so I played everything. And so when I got to high school, it was like they only wanted me available for basketball season. Like, you know, my grades were golden. My grades are golden during basketball season. But you know, once basketball season is over, it's like, you know, they don't really care about. Yeah. Like how is it possible that I'm not getting good grades? Like basketball season, but as soon as the basketball season is over, like I don't get good grades anymore. Like, and so that was a reason why I got out of there. It was just like I'm not gonna be used as a pawn, you know. Like make me available for this, but you know when that goes, all right, we talk to you again when basketball season comes around. And so. Yeah. That was one of the really reason why I wanted to get out of Maryland and go somewhere and just get a fresh start where they was going to focus on my school and my basketball at the same time. And that's what Proctor Academy did for me.
Yeah, like I didn't mean to distract you from your answer, but you were talking about, you know, how you didn't get serious from basketball. You didn't
Oh, yeah, my bad. Yeah.
It's all good. That's why we're here.
Yeah, no, he was talking about the NBA you know, my first time out there and everything. I didn't really get serious until I was probably like a sophomore, and you know, those letters start coming in and you're seeing like, I watched on TV, but you know, I never really, like, I just love playing the game. Like I was going to play it no matter what. Like, if I didn't make it, or, you know, like if I did or not. So it was always going to be there in my life. And so, but once you get that first letter, is that that's when it really gets serious for you. And you're like, oh man, I can do this, because I've never, as good as you are, that's probably one of the reasons why, I kind of struggled with the aspect of the, not even like the transition from college to, college to the NBA, is I never had like a mentor figure like that showed me like the ropes from this transition to that transition. You know, when I left to go out there, you know, I really didn't have after going into, you know, from Proctor Academy to UConn, I really didn't have any, like, I guess you could say guidance about the situation that I was getting myself into, like as far as what to expect, you know, what to this and that. And like, even when I got hurt in college, like, you know, I get hurt in college. I think I was probably like first round at that point before getting hurt. Season's starting off great. I mean, I think we only lost one, maybe two games so far, right before Big East is about to start off, and that's when I got hurt. You know, I fight my way back, get back, come back stronger than I was before. And then, you know, everybody leave me. I'm the last senior. I mean, it was me, Gavin, and Stanley.
Hold on that, Jerome, because Matt has some like questions about, you know, that team and how that relates to your overseas experience. So we're gonna come back to that.
Okay. But
when you were at UConn, right? Like, not even UConn, before that, like, what did you know about overseas basketball? Like,
I didn't know anything. I didn't even know anything about NBA basketball. Like, I just had a favorite player. Like, Tracy McGrady was my favorite player. Like, man, if I get a pair of T-Max, I'm gonna have 40 that night. That's how it was for me. Like, I will always, anytime, you know, I put on a new pair of shoes, I was gonna have a great game. But for me, I didn't know anything about overseas. I didn't know, like I said, I just love basketball, football. I played some little bit of baseball, but I just love basketball and football. So it wasn't important to it. You know, it never clicked in my mind like at I want to do this for the rest of my life, like professionally. Like, I didn't even, I never got to grasp that, because growing up, I didn't have any NBA or NFL guys that were in my ear, like, just telling me this or that. Like, I that's what I didn't have. And that's why going back, like I said, like, one of the probably the things that hurt me a lot, because I didn't have that, you know, somebody that's been there, done that type of thing to tell me about this or that.
Yeah, like, even for me, we were both basketball junkies through and through, but, like, I never even thought one second about I can go play in Asia or Europe and somebody's going to pay me to play basketball over there. Like, that never was a thought. Like,
ever. I never, because I guess it was a situation, I mean, growing up, but at our time, internet and social media wasn't big like it is now. So you couldn't really go and find any of those type of like a video of somebody like doing this or that, or somebody even, like, you know, a lot of people get on the podcast now, you know, and just and try to give what we're doing. If I had this, like, I could go in and you know, click in or something and get the information or know what to do if it happens in this type of situation or this type of situation. It's what I didn't have.
Guys either went to the league and you saw them play more, or they kind of disappeared, you know, from your mind for a couple of years. Was there anybody that, like, I mean, UConn turned out like a lot of pros in that time. Were there guys that came back in the off seasons that could give you some tips about that, or anybody that passed along that kind of experience that maybe alerted you to, hey, overseas is a potential route?
That's the thing. I mean, at that point, we didn't really have a lot of guys that's going overseas. That was really one of the biggest reasons why, the biggest reason why I went to UConn is when I was transitioning from Proctor to UConn, we had the most active players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And so that's a no-brainer for me. Like, you know, playing with a coach, a great coach in Jim Calhoun, and going to a program where they get people into the NBA. And so overseas wasn't even a, it's not even a glimpse in my mind. Like, it's not even something that you're coming across. Like, it's at the point where I was at, like, it was like, this is where I'm going. Like, this is where I need to be to get to this point.
It was Kentucky, like modern day Kentucky. That's right. Where UConn was at the time. Yeah.
Right. And like, I came in with 8 freshmen because we had just put 8 people in the NBA.
It's a pretty good turnover.
Like, that's the easiest way to say it. You know, like, that's 8 people left to go to the NBA. How do you turn that down?
Yeah.
So for anybody who's not familiar, let's throw off a couple of those names that you played with that are guys that at least had cups of coffee in the NBA. You had Hashim Thabeet, AJ Price, Stanley Robinson. I mean, you eventually played with Kemba Walker for a year, right? Kemba's freshman year.
I played with 2 years. He played a freshman, and I played with him my junior year. He came in. That's what he actually helped when I got hurt. He helped a lot. Hold the things together with AJ. I think Dougie was still there at that time. Craig Ostrey. Yeah. So I played with him. I played with who else? I think that's probably it. But, you know, like, as far as guys coming back, like, but like when I got there, it was Marcus Williams, like, that was leaving, point guard. You had Denham Brown,
Josh Boone. Guard.
You had Denham Brown, but I think Denham Brown was, you know, was the killer on that team at that time. And you had Rudy Gay. You got like you said, Josh Boone. You got Hilton Armstrong, Jeff Adrian.
Emeka. Ben Gordon, and that was the crew all before that.
Yeah, that was before. But those are all the 8 guys I'm saying that left. That was right before me that were going into the draft. Like it was like that every year. So it's like, you know, it's like, how do I turn it down? You know, even if you think in like 1 year, like it's a lot of, you know, a lot of guys that even possibility to go 1 year, 2 years. We had a lot of guys that do that.
You had to sacrifice, you know, some of your individual stats to play with guys like that. And I think that's a little more consistent with the overseas style of play where it's a little more team oriented. Do you think that helped you longer term getting used to being around other, you know, impact players like that?
It does. I mean, because if you want to win a championship, you got to be with those type of players. My 2 championship teams that I was overseas, those are the type of players that I was with. I mean, if like you get into a championship type of style that you want to get to, like you need those type of people around you in order to, and for me personally, in my experience, that you need those type of people around you in order to win championships, that has the same mindset as you, that has the same grind as you, that, you know, that's going to go out there and give 110% on the floor.
Yeah, like it sounds a lot what, you know, everybody's talking about Scottie Pippen's interview, how he was talking about not being a sidekick and the media praising individuality over teams. Like when you overseas, it's all about the team. If you're playing in a respected league.
It's really hard. It's really hard for you to like go out because it's really different. And the coaches really have a lot of, you know, over here in the NBA, it's different. You know, coaches don't really have, I mean, yes and no, you know, but it's more of a players league. And overseas, it's more of a coaches and like in the office type of league. You know, players are so interchangeable because it's like one week he could be there and the next week he could be gone. And so that's probably one of the things also adjustments is, you know, you got to get to, I could be gone if I don't put this work in right now. So it's, they're going to try to find somebody new or they think that's better than you.
Your contract's not going to save you. They're going to find a way to break the contract.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to find a way. Yeah. A lot of that stuff goes on. You know, they'll try to hit you with a drug test say you wasn't in before curfew you know, they'll find a way to, if they don't want you there, they'll get rid of you. They're going to find a way.
Yeah, we always try to tell players and people that I help with my company, where I advise them is that you want to keep a good relationship with your teammates and the team and the community, because if the community and the culture and the city that you're in loves you, they'll keep you there because of public relations. They're really big on fandom out there and overseas international sports.
Man, they're extremely passionate. That's like it's like me growing up here. If I had grown up here in Colorado, that I should love the Nuggets. Like no matter what they do, no matter where I move in the world, like that's always gonna be my team. Like those colors they're gonna be around my house, like everywhere. And that's something like they're like, no matter where they go, where they travel, they're always gonna have their team flag or their team colors with them. They're like a passionate fan. Like they're gonna have that with them no matter what. And I've seen some of like the biggest like fights and like just off of like the love of your team. Not even like, you know, I just hate this. They do it for like the love of their team.
Yeah.
You got a good fan fight brawl story for us, Jerome? I feel like everybody's got at least one of people going a little too far.
Oh man, I don't know if it's not a good one, but this has just happened to me recently. Like this is like when I just was in the Dominican Republic. And
that was my game.
It's a championship game 7. No, game 6. And the refs called the game because like they were making some bad calls, like, you know, they was really fucking up. And so it's a couple of stuff got thrown on the court, you know, at the refs a couple of times. I think the one time the ref got hit like with something in the back, and they wanted to continue the game. Like at that point, you know, you gotta put your foot down, man. I just got hit in the back of the head with a rock. The game has got to be over. But, you know, they came back like, no, nah, come on, play the game. And then something else finally happened. Something else got thrown on court. They called the game at like the 8-minute mark of the fourth quarter. And then the team I was on is the fans probably had like one little section behind the basket. And the other fans, I guess they were saying like at the beginning, because I didn't get there until game 6 of this, the tournament in DR. So the other team, like I was talking to some of the players and we're like, yeah, we were up 2-0 at the beginning and we had all the fans. And then as soon as we went down to like 2-2, and then they got the other. So like, This side of the back wall was their fans, and then under the basket, on the other basket, was their fans also. So we only had fans on one basket. Like probably like it was probably like a good like 7-1, like fan base, like theirs to ours. And so refs called the game, their fans rushed the court to celebrate. Like they thinking that they won, like they called the game, that the game is gonna be over, they don't have to play no more, like you're not coming back tomorrow. We the champions.
Mm-hmm.
Our fans, they weren't having it at all. Like they wasn't having that. Like no celebrating, nah, yeah. They rushed them. Like I told you, you know, they outnumbered our fans like a good 7-1. And so, but they wasn't having it. They rushed them, and then that's when all hell broke loose. It was a good 20-25 minutes, like Royal Rumble, like WWF type styles. Chairs being thrown, rocks. Bricks. They had stuff from the sink, like the what's this thing they call the spout? Like they pulled it off the wall. I'm talking about getting in breaking the shower things, anything to fight with. I'm like, oh man, what in the world am I at right now? Like
yeah.
I'm talking about like they running in, people screaming. It's kids on the court and everything too.
Yeah.
Like kids,
you got to start them early.
Yeah, but it was a Royal Rumble until, you know, cop brought out the big AR. Everything quiet down. Everything quiet down. He put the gun, showed them. Everything stopped. But you know, that was probably the craziest. Like it was like people bleeding. I saw a dude walked up and the next morning, his eye was like probably like this big on one side. I'm like, man, what in the world did I just get into?
But you know, it's crazy. People wouldn't even believe these stories if now, you know, they're all over social media. Because, you know, as we get older, you know, stories start to, people add on to this story and they get exaggerated.
Right.
Like, none of this stuff is exaggerated.
Yeah, it's
like, you know, you're in Europe, they light flares in the stands, they singing and
It's like it's real like that. Like it's like overseas. Like it's talking about as far as now being like in Europe. Like he said, man, it's like flares and like that passion, like songs, chants. They'll come outside.
The whole game.
Yeah, like anywhere, like inside the game, they'll fight. Like when I played in Jerusalem, probably like their fans was like A1. Like I'm talking about drums, like everything. Like it's like you think they got a band up there, drums, flares, everything. You gonna smoke the whole building is smoked out because it's flares, you know. Probably like the atmosphere, you know, you get it, it's just crazy. Like they give you the energy to play. Just wild. Cause at that point we were trying to also get into EuroLeague, because we were EuroCup. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to show, you know, that we got one of the best arenas to play in. And I agree, we probably did. I mean, it was probably a lot of at that point a lot of hating going on by Maccabi because they didn't want us
take that spot.
They didn't want us to get into EuroLeague. And so that's probably a lot that really kept it up because our fans' arena was, like I said, A1, like as far as the energy that they brought to us on and off the floor. You know, you pull up anywhere, like he said, like the fan base that you get, like the energy that you get from them. Like I go into the grocery store and, you know, it's people, Jerome, can I take a picture? Like, when I was my first year out, like, my first year, I started in Israel, Holon. And yeah, that's where I got my first scoring title. And, you know, just the fans, it's just great. Like, they embrace you. If you do your job, they're going to love you. Like, that's one of the best things that I love about playing over there is, like, if you go out and do your job, you will be remembered forever. Like, they'll always, like, you always, anytime as you come back, they're always going to embrace you. Like, you have somewhere to go.
Yeah, 100%. Go back when we touched on, you know, your first year out. Like, what was that transition like going from, you know, UConn, you're going there with the mindset. They just had 8 guys go to the league. You're expecting to go to the league. You get injured. And now, like, how does your mind frame shift as you've seen it? Is somebody telling you, hey, you know, you might go second round. You might go on draft. You might want to start looking at overseas options now. Like, what was that transition like in terms of like your mental, in terms of preparing for your professional career?
At that point, my mental was like, you know, I knew I was still like one of the best players out there. Like, even coming back after my injury, you know, I still knew I was like one of the best players out there. And at that season, my senior season, my son was on the way, and that really like affected me a lot because at that point, like I said, you know, I don't have anybody that I talk to about type of situations like this. And so to hear, you know, you having your first kid come on the way as a senior in college, it really threw me off because, you know, at that point I came really disconnected with my team because, you know, everybody asked me questions about, yo, Jerome, I hear you having a son on the way. And, you know, I'm like, I don't really know how to address the situation, you know. So I'm closing myself off more and more from it, from like, I guess like everybody, like even my teammates, my coaches, and like I get into practice, I leave right out, like just to get back out because I don't want to even hear like the questions about, you know, this or that, like. And so I it really affected me, like, because I came into the season, I think I was like 25-5. And then, you know, it just spiraled out. Like, it was just like, I didn't know how to handle the situation. I mean, that's the best way to put it. I didn't know how to handle becoming a father at, I don't know how old was I think I'm 21 maybe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just having somebody, even like I said, having somebody to talk to about that situation, like, you know, it's been a lot of guys in that situation, but, you know, I just didn't know nobody that I could talk to help me out. You know, my mom was a big part of my life, but, you know, that's not a situation that you want to bring to your mom at that point. You know, it's like you need somebody like a bigger brother, or, you know, like somebody, or even somebody that's been through the game, or, you know, that you can be like, did this happen to you? Like, what can I do? Like, how can I turn this around? Like, and so that was like the one thing that hit me in my senior year that really threw me in a spiral. Cause like I came back, I was good. Like my knee was good. Like everything was good. It was just I didn't know how to handle the connection with a son on the way and handling the questions from everybody. And so like after that, you know, I go undrafted. I do the D-League thing. But oh, hold on, I go undrafted. But you know, I still go to do the interviews. Yeah. Yeah, I did the interviews, and they're like, why didn't you come out last year? Like, we would have drafted you in the first round. Like, and then that hits you in the head. He's like, what the fuck? Like,
why wouldn't you take me now then if you would have taken
me? No, but why wouldn't who was in my corner to tell me this? Like,
yeah.
And so that's it's and then that hurts. Like, you know, that hurts. You go undrafted and you telling me that you would have drafted me last year in the first round. But, you know, that goes to, you know, it's how well did your team do that year? And so that's all the stuff. And so it hurt to hear, you know, you go undrafted and then the teams are telling you I would have drafted you. And so after that, I do the D-League for a couple of years.
Jerome, real quick, if you don't mind, before we get to the D-League stuff, just sticking with that for 1 second. If there's somebody listening to this that's going through sort of a similar, stage of life, or you know, they're trying to balance, you know, personal stuff, becoming a dad, total, you know, turnover with teammates, the draft situation, maybe not as much team success, like all that stuff at once, and they maybe don't have somebody in their corner too. Is there anything you would pass on to them advice-wise, or who they should seek out for that kind of advice?
Don't be afraid to reach out. Like at that point, like I said, I didn't know who I could talk to or something, but if I could say to like a college player or even like a youth, but don't be afraid to reach out to somebody or ask for some help. That's probably like the biggest thing. Cause I cut myself off from so many people, and you know, just don't just disconnect yourself from the whole world. And I'm not from the whole world, but I mean, that's what I did. I mean, I was disconnected because I was afraid of the situation.
Yeah, and just to piggyback, and that's a great point, Matt. I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of times people look at successful people and they think, oh, they're too busy, and they assume that they don't have time to talk to somebody like me. Most of the people that I know that are successful, most of my peers that are successful, including myself, we love sharing advice. We love, you know, helping and advise people, you know, whether it be personally or professionally. So, you know, especially with social media now, like you can hit somebody in the DMs, Facebook, people respond, you know, if you come at them the right way from a genuine place. So yeah, just reach out, you know, contact us. Any advice that, you know, I can give, Jerome can give, Matt, you know, and all of our place of expertise, we're looking to do that. And because we don't want players, like that's the thing about us, we should be building each other. Every generation should be better than the next, whether it be on the court, off the court, personally, spiritually, whatever it is, we should be better. And it's our job to kind of pass that on.
You got to find a way to pass the information on. I mean, that's probably I was telling you, I don't know. I know Mike knows that I became a life license and life insurance also. And so that was one of the biggest things for me. It's just when I got that information to understand how money works, that's one of the biggest things in my thing is like how money works. I was like, man, what the hell? Yeah. Why wasn't anybody telling me this?
They don't teach us this in school. Like nobody tells us this.
Not even in school, man. Like my right hand, like this person next to me, why aren't you telling me this? Yeah. Like even like, I wanted to get into like into some of these colleges and talk to the guys and explain them to how money works. Like you can be rich right now. Like if you start, like if you save some of that money or do something with that money that's gonna impact it. Like a lot of people don't know how long it takes for your money to double. Like, and so it's like, if you don't know these kind of things, like you're always gonna be losing.
Yeah,
because there's so many people that know, and they're just this much in front of you. But that's all it. Yeah. That's all it could be, though. That's all it could be. And you're just lacking that much to just get you over to this. It's just information that could be passed on.
Yeah, it's all information. That's the separating key between, you know, someone that's average and somebody that's being great is this information.
And being able to absorb it, though, to like being able to not let it just go in one ear and out the other.
Yeah. And you got to be in a place to accept it. So as you were going through that process, you in these interviews, they're telling you all of these things, like, so you know that you belong in the NBA.
I know I belong. I knew that I belonged in the NBA. It was just, this person says this, that person says that. It's not about talent.
Yeah.
That's one thing it wasn't. It was never about talent.
At your agent at the time, like, what were they saying? Were they telling you about your options? Like, what were they saying? Like, obviously, the D League isn't what it is now today.
But that's the thing. I didn't have an agent my junior year. That's when I needed an agent. My junior year is when I needed somebody in my corner, like, telling me, you can still do this. You can still do that. Like, you have options.
And Jim Calhoun wasn't getting feedback? Jim Calhoun wasn't getting feedback from teams or anything?
My only option that I knew is that I had to come back to school. Mm. That was my only option that I knew of.
Wow. Yeah, you always hear stories. Sorry to cut you off, man. But you always hear stories about, Coach K or John Calipari, and they're telling their guys, like, listen, either they say it in two different ways. The guy is an underclassman, he wants to come out, and they're saying, hey, look, like, I don't know if they're going to take you. You might want to come back. This is the feedback I'm getting. They're talking second round. They're talking late first round. Or they say, listen, you got to go right now because your stock isn't going to get any higher if they're really about the players. So I'm not trying to put you in a position to talk about, your coaches or anything like that. But did you have any of those conversations with the coaching staff?
No, I mean, I didn't have none of those. I mean, as far as that I can remember, I mean, that was 10. I mean, I think I would remember, but I mean, that was about 12 years ago now. I never had a type of problem with Coach Calhoun as far as that. But I mean, as I think that they were doing what they thought was best for their program. That's the only thing that I can register in my mind is like, they know that they want me to come back. I guess that's what's going to be best for them. So it's not, that's like I said, I didn't have anybody in my corner telling me this is what's best for Jerome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're not trying to cast aspersions on the UConn staff or anything.
None of that. I mean,
it's not their priority to go.
But like I said, when I came back, it was still up to me. It was my distractions that led me away. I mean, I think I still could have. It was just, if you're going to get drafted, you have to have a successful team. I mean, at that, we weren't. I think we just made it to 500, or maybe we were behind 500, and so it wasn't. It wasn't like, it's just like I said, it was me being able to handle the situation and things could have been different.
And I think that's a lot of what you said, just the accountability, A lot of guys will blame other people.
I never go in and try to push anything off on somebody else. That's just how I am. I'm not going to try to be like, if he had not did this and then that should have been different. Like, no, it was me. Just being able to handle the situation. That was the biggest thing for me that really, when I saw things try to go in a different direction, as far as not even like, I would still know how good I was, but it's being able to have somebody in your corner and winning games also. Like, if you're not winning, then nobody's going to come and look at you.
And I think college, especially if you play, obviously I played mid-major, you play very high level, Power 5 Conference Division 1, but it prepares you for the business, if not AAU nowadays, it prepares you for the business of basketball, which is what pro sports is. And two things I heard right there that I think a lot of coming players, men and women, should be taking in is that, one, you're accountable, you're real with yourself, you take responsibility for your own actions and what happens, but you also have to do what's best for you and your career. because a lot of people are going to, you know, give you advice, but it's always sprinkled with, this is going to also help them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for a lot of players, you know, you always hear the narrative, you know, finish school, you know, that's so ingrained and conditioned in us, but school will always be there. If you have the chance to come out and better your family, your situation, you have to do that.
Exactly. I mean, you can always say, I mean, at that point, you're going to be making enough money where you can get into any school. That's not the issue. It's just, when do you want to do it? Are you going to go back and do it? Or do, like, it's a choice. Like as I said, it's a, you got to make a choice.
And a lot of schools will honor your scholarship even if you leave early after the fact now. Anyway, online school is a lot easier to do that too. Like there's so many more options.
It hurts because it hurts the schools on their their future scholarship. So they want to get these players back in to graduate because they need them to graduate in order to get scholarships. So it's not, you know, you think that, do you know they're doing something for you, but it's, you know, like he said, it's a hidden thing. Like it's that, you know, it's like they need you too.
So Jerome, you had a very successful D-League experience. I'm sure that was probably a bit of a culture shock though, after playing in the UConn, the facilities you have, the teammates you have, and then the D-League wasn't like what it is now, right? Like it's a very different sort of style of play and setup and, you know, experience, I guess.
It definitely is. But like I said, I got lucky because that was, the Thunder was one of the teams that were interested in drafting me at that point. And so that was one of the reasons why I went to their D-League team. Cause at that time when I was in the D-League, it was only two teams that had like
direct affiliates.
Huh?
They only had direct affiliates. Everybody.
Yeah, direct. Yeah, that's what direct affiliates. It was the Thunder and the Spurs, and so they were only two teams that, you know, going to send down players. No other players are going to get sent to this team from like. So all the other teams, you know, they are affiliated with three other teams. So you got three other teams sending down two to three players. Like, how do you say you want to get these players good, but you sending down nine players that's going to take away their minutes instantly, because they send the player down for the NBA, he's playing right away, no matter who's in that spot. And so that, like I said, that was the best thing for me, is being with a direct affiliate. They were A1, how they ran everything. We had great apartments right next to the facility, great coaches, great staff, everything. I mean, like I said, it was just because we were a direct affiliate. We were part of the Thunder. And so, I mean, we could go to games and stuff like that. And so, and at that time I had did preseason with the Thunder. So, you know, I'm good with KD, Russ, James, you know, we in there playing video games and whatnot. And so that was a really reason why I went to their D League team, because I did that summer league with them. They're like, we want you to come in, you know, do our D League. We think you have a shot to get called up, you know. And so I did that the whole year. The whole year was great. I mean, I didn't get the call up that first year that I wanted. My numbers were good. We were like, I can't remember where we lost. And I think we lost maybe in the semis, but you know, at that point, and the D-League playoffs at that point, you know, they was funny because they get to, you know, a team, you know, like I said, they got three affiliates. So if you got a team that's really want to win a championship, you know, thirsty to win a championship, they try to stack their team. Like they'll send down or people that's on that cusp, that's on the NBA team, they sit on the bench, they just send them down for the D-League for the rest of the year so that the affiliate will win that championship. So, you know, you get in there, you playing like four or five people that actually played in the NBA that's not in the D-League. So it's like, oh, man, like we've been busting our ass all year, and then they send down like three or four people that's been playing in the NBA all year. And so that was probably like the one of the things was the bullshit about my first year. But it was great. Like great teammates. Like I said, that's something that you, in order to last, you have to have great teammates. That's not, it's, if you're going to enjoy and waking up and being happy, it's going to be a tough road no matter where you are, what city, I mean, how great the city, if you got to wake up and see people that you don't like.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough day. And so that was like, I was blessed. I mean, like I said, great, great staff, great organization that's behind us, and great teammates. And so it was a really a good transition as far as that. Like a lot of those teams are bussing to.
Yeah. I was getting ready to say,
we're flying. We're flying. They're taking care of us. We're flying to a lot of those games. And so that's like one of the best things about, you know, like I said, being a director, they really took care of us. And I really didn't have to worry about any of those like struggles that's about bad apartments and stuff like that, or 9-hour, 8-hour bus rides. Like,
you're not in North Dakota in the winter. You know?
Yeah, I think the Iowa, they used to drive everywhere. They didn't fly anywhere. They were 12 hours sometimes. No way.
Like, that's why I love this platform we have. Because, like, every narrative I've heard about the D-League has been the opposite of what your experience was. Everybody was busing, eating McDonald's, Holiday Inn.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I be here listening to their stories, like when we go and play, like, or go to their holiday. Dang, y'all living here? This where y'all live? Like, dang.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was so, and you know, and what brought me back my second year is because I did the USA team. Mm-hmm. I played Pan America games. And so that was one of the things that I didn't get my call up. I was mad, you know, I'm like, man, something gotta happen. Like, I'm not doing this. I can't do a D-League for another year. But they were like, you get a chance to play on the USA team. I hadn't, that was my first opportunity. I didn't, as a youth, I never got to play on any like the 16 or 17 unders or anything like that. And so they were like, in order to play in this you had to be part of the D-League. And so it was like a D-League all-star team type of thing to go and play.
Because there was a lockout that year, right, Drew?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was. And so they put us together as like a all-star type of team. Mm-hmm. And we went and did that. And I came back, had another great year. I get my call up at the end. And like usual, I get hurt the very last game of the season. It's just, I mean, I guess I'm not just my luck, just, you know, not what it needed to be. I got hurt the very last game. I'm having a great game too. I just came out. I think I had maybe like 8 points in that first quarter before I get hurt. I think it was, I know for a fact it was the lefty point guard that played in, he played in Miami. Huh?
Kendrick Nunn?
No, he's I think he's European.
Goran Dragic.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Fucking hate him.
Took your knee out or?
Damn.
No, I went up for a dunk.
Oh.
He pushed me in the back. Yeah. You know, it wasn't probably like a put, but any type of pressure
is going to. That's rule number one as a hooper, right?
You can't do that. Any type of pressure is going to throw somebody off. And so I'm going up for it and I get pushed in my back. So I can't even finish at this point. So I put my foot down to stop me from going any further, like, you know, because I'm moving, I'm in the air. So if I go down, I got to stop myself from going into like the cameraman and like the stands is right behind the basket. So I put my foot down, bone bruise to my ankle. I'm out like three and a half, 4 months. Can't do nothing. The bone bruise is no timetable. Right, heals when it wants to. You can't really do anything to help the healing. And so that was, like I said, very last game. It hurt because at that point, you know, I'm like I said, they signed me for the rest of the season. I went from my 10-day to them signing me for the rest of the season. I was unrestricted for 2 years. So it was like, you know, they could cut me at any time and they don't have to pay me. So you go into off season, I can't do nothing. I can't work out like nothing. So, at that point, they traded me to Phoenix. I think that was the same time the Olympics was happening. I talked to my agent at the time that I had, and I'm like, I see ESPN, I see my name go across, you know, on the ticker, like Jerome Dyson has been traded to Phoenix. I call him up, you know, like, what the hell is going on? Like, I just got traded.
How does that feel when you see it on the ticker before somebody reaches out to you?
It's terrible. I mean, you don't know what to expect. I mean, you don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm unrestricted. You don't know. Like, I don't know what the hell is going to happen next.
Yeah.
I talked to him. He's like, nah, this didn't happen. He's over at the Olympics. Like, I'm like, what the fuck? No, I see this. It's
they ESPN doesn't get that wrong.
Right. Yeah. Not much wrong, Dyson. And so I'm like, all right, yeah. A couple of days, like not maybe a day, maybe 2 days. And then it's like Jerome Dyson has been waived by Phoenix Suns. I'm like, so I'm calling him again, like, yo, what the hell is going on? He just said I wasn't traded, and then it's just said now it says I've been cut. Like, what? Like, and he's like, no, like, and so at that point, like, I was like, man, this is some, like, so I knew, like, yo, this is not the guy for me. I had to fire my agent at that point, and so it was some dumb clause in the thing. It's like, it's a time period where you can hire another agent. Like, you got to wait a certain amount of days between when you can hire another agent. And so, but at the time that like all this is going on to happen, like to everything is happening, timetable from everything is closing up, like that, like spots on teams are like this and that. And by the time I can actually find another agent to represent me. And so, you know, by the time I do all that, like everything is pretty much, I have to go into another, do this training camp again thing. I'm like, man, at that point, I'm like, I don't want to, like, how is this even possible? Like, how do I have to go through, how do I have to start this whole process over again? And so at that point, you know, I'm like, nah, I'm not. I was like, I had just had enough. I was like, I'm going to go overseas. And so, and then that's how I started my first year off in Israel.
Yeah, just going back a little bit, Ron, like, I literally just had a conversation with the player that I'm advising, and he's considering firing his agent. And I told him, make sure you read your clause in your contract, your player agent agreement, because there is that time period where, like for him, after a certain date, the contract is automatically renewed. So like you can't even switch agents after that time period has passed until the next year.
Right. There's a lot of stuff into it. And then there's like some agents are trying to tie some stuff like overseas. Like if they find you a job, like if some agents will be like, I got your, like, kind of like your rights for the next year. Like, anything that you get next year, I get a part, like,
mm-hmm. Even if they didn't get you a job. Yeah. Right.
And so it's a lot of stuff that you got to be careful, because it's, like I said, it's a business. Everybody is looking out for themselves. At the end of the day, everybody is looking out for themselves. How I can plunge myself higher, get past this person. Like, it's, everybody's looking for that next. It's not, like he says, it's at the end of the day, yeah, they try, but it's always has a little bit something that's going to benefit them.
Yeah, in fact, educate yourselves about this business, because they will take advantage of you. And before it's too late, you're going to look up.
Before you know.
And, yeah.
If it's in writing, there's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing.
That feels like a pretty good stopping point for the first part of our conversation with Jerome. We covered lots of good stuff there about his college career, his transition overseas, what Jim Calhoun's impact was like on his transition from college basketball to pro basketball, what it was like playing in the G League, what it was like playing in the NBA, and obviously where we left off. It's right at the point where Jerome's kind of decided to pursue an overseas career, and he's had a great one. So stay tuned for part two. We've got a lot more good stuff coming, a lot of good stories there. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe. We'd love it if you would tell a friend, another hoop junkie out there that would get something out of this conversation. Or if you're a prospective basketball player yourself, I think there's a lot you can learn here from Jerome's story as well. He's very candid, very open, and we really appreciate that kind of stuff. So stay tuned. And as always, we are presented by betonline.ag.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.